Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Stephen Sewer, a member of the club's Business and Leadership Forum, and I'll be your moderator for tonight's program. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Tonight, the Commonwealth Club of California will examine the credit union movement in a discussion with Diana Dykstra, President and CEO of the California and Nevada Credit Union League, and Kristen Christian, an entrepreneur and social media activist who conceived of the Bank Transfer Day movement, inspiring tens of thousands of consumers to quit their banks and move to consumer-friendly credit unions. Please welcome Diana Dykstra and Kristen Christian. Diana Dykstra serves as president and CEO of the California and Nevada Credit Union Leagues, a trade association representing 10 million consumers and 400 credit unions. In her role, she engages in regulatory and legislative advocacy, oversight and education, both for her member credit unions and for the credit union industry. Before moving to the league, she served for 6 years as president and CEO of the San Francisco Fire Credit Union, where she managed a period of rapid growth in membership. Perhaps, Diana, we can start with the basics. What is a credit union?
What is a credit union? That's always an interesting question. The word credit union confuses a lot of people. So we talk about credit unions as being financial cooperatives. And a real difference between a credit union and a bank is that the cooperative structure versus the shareholder structure. We have the same products, we have the same services, we have boards of directors, we have management, we've got all of the same tools, but the governance structure is different. And in that cooperative structure, all of the intent of a credit union is to gather deposits from its members and give out loans to its members, all at best price and low fees. And at the end of the day, how much you return in your earnings back to the membership. So credit unions in California, for example, a member of a credit union earns about $242 more a year or saves $242 a year by having an account at a credit union. In contrast to a for-profit bank, their business is to make money for the shareholders. And that's really the dichotomy of the two. We have the same products, but our business model is different. We're beholden to all of the members that have deposits and loans at the credit union institution, where the bank really focuses on a return to pay the shareholders.
Mm-hmm. And have they been around a long time? Where did they get their start?
Well, I could go back. My daughter told me they really started in China 5,000 years ago. But the modern story is they began in the 1800s in Germany with farmers and farmers needing credit, and they needed money to grow their crops. The earliest ones here in the United States were about 102 years old, and it was in Massachusetts. Oldest one in California in 1921, a post office credit union. But credit unions really didn't start to grow until the depth of the Depression. We started to see a lot of movement in credit unions with a height in the 1970s. There were about 22,000 credit unions in the state of California. Today we have 450, but they were very small, very localized, and over time they grew together, and we have less institutions and more assets. In the U.S., we have 7,400 credit unions and just approaching a total of $1 trillion in assets and 94 million consumers.
And credit unions are formed around groups?
Credit unions can be formed a lot of different ways. The original credit unions were formed in communities. The very first credit unions all were around community because that's, you know, in the old days, that's what you were. We didn't fly across the United States. We didn't drive. I drove up from Los Angeles this morning. It was all about what happened in the community. And as credit unions grew, it got harder and harder to define the community. So it really started latching to employer groups. San Francisco Fire Credit Union, San Francisco Federal is city and county employees. Patelco was the telephone employees credit union. So it was really around employers. And then as we saw changes in employment, credit unions began to change, and more today still have core that is in that employer group, but they mostly have gone back to community because it makes better sense in the business model.
So to join the California Feminist Credit Union, you don't necessarily have to be a feminist?
Well, I haven't a clue, but I would suspect, yes, you could probably join the credit union. I've never asked.
Okay. So you said there's 7,400 credit unions?
In the United States, yeah.
And how does that compare to the banks?
That's what's about the same number. Banks and credit unions have the same number. The difference in banks and credit union is asset size. And I know Kristen's going to talk a little bit about asset size and big banks. Average credit union assets are about $300 million. And then on the banking side, we're talking $2 billion. So it's a very large difference in average size. 50% of the credit unions in the United States are less than $20 million in assets. So we're relatively small institutions, but collectively, and that's an interesting thing about credit unions, we work collectively. We have shared branching, so you can use 4,000 branches, different credit union branches around the United States. We have a surcharge-free ATM network that has 28,000 ATMs around the United States. So we work collaboratively so that the smallness doesn't impact you. And I know a lot of people say, well, the credit union may be too small or they don't have enough branches. Credit unions are very innovative, very nimble, and flexible, and can adjust to the demands of the marketplace very easily and with the members' best interest in mind.
Do the big banks want to crush you?
Oh, they want nothing but to deny us our oxygen and see us gone.
Okay. So tell me about 2011, a quiet, ordinary year, or...
Yeah, 2011 was a great year when we talked about the economy and financial services until this young lady, and actually it was the Occupy group, really started getting angry. And I let Kristen tell her story, but all of a sudden people woke up and went, wait, this just isn't right. And we need to do something about it. Now, I've been saying that for 30 years. Nobody listened to me, but, you know, it's great that they're listening to someone else. And maybe I was a little bit biased, and that's why they didn't want to listen.
Let's bring Kristen in. On September 29th, 2011, Bank of America announced that they would begin charging a $5 monthly fee for customers who used the bank's debit card services. For Kristen Christian, it was the last straw for Bank of America. After researching alternatives online, Kristen contacted all of her friends and encouraged them to transfer their money to fee-friendly credit unions all on the same day, November 5th, which she coined Bank Transfer Day. Bank Transfer Day caught on via the World Wide Web, and tens of thousands of people pledged to quit their banks. November 5th was one of the biggest days in credit union history. So, Kristen, you've been a longtime customer of B of A all the way back to childhood?
Yes, I'd been a Bank of America customer for 13 years. But when they announced that they were going to charge a $5 fee, honestly, if they would have applied the fee to every customer, I might not have caused the stir I did. That they chose to target the impoverished and the working class. And that did not seem fair to me, especially to target those who couldn't afford it. My father, who was both in the military and a Texan, always said, stand up for what you believe in. If you see an injustice, it is your duty as an American to stand up and say something. And so I did. I reached out to my friends in the second language that every member of the millennial generation is fluent in, Facebook. It was definitely very much an honor to help cultivate the anger that so many Americans were experiencing and channel it into something positive, something very direct, very simple, that everyone could do to have an impact on their community.
And how many people signed on to your pledge?
In the end, there were 85,000 RSVPs. The amazing thing about that was that many people who had RSVP'd were members of the millennial generation, the homeland generation, or Generation X. What those individuals did was truly remarkable, and I think lends to the spirit behind credit unions. is that they reached out to their family members who weren't on Facebook. They went to knock on Aunt Dottie's door and talk to her very directly about the positive benefits of doing business with a credit union. And in fact, I actually had a woman who was an 80-year-old woman from Wisconsin who identified herself as a member of the Tea Party. And her granddaughter helped her sign up for Facebook so she could RSVP to the event and participate to the fullest, and also just to message me and say, since her generation was my age, they haven't seen, you know, very positive direct actions, and in trying to implement change, that there's anger, there's frustration, but nobody wanted to just take a positive consumer action. And that was terribly touching to me, to have someone who, and quite honestly, is probably on the opposite end of the political spectrum than I am. And we wouldn't see eye to eye on very many issues, but there's one issue that every American can agree on, no matter where you lie in the political spectrum, and that is that it is time to put our communities first.
And how many Facebook friends do you have now?
I actually, due to the media attention, have had to delete my personal Facebook. When I got rid of it, I had I actually had not added anyone that I did not personally know. I'd added, I guess, about 100 from the credit union movement. But I currently maintain a public figure page, which keeps people up to date on what I'm doing, where I'm going, where I'm speaking, which, honestly, I don't have time for anything other than work these days. That page just hit the mark of 1,500 fans.
And so you're doing a lot of public speaking now?
That's very true. I actually just less than a week ago got back from the Governmental Affairs Conference in Washington, D.C. that's hosted by the Credit Union National Association, otherwise known as CUNA. And it was absolutely humbling to be what I'm told is the youngest person to present during the general session, and also terribly nerve-wracking to speak before 4,000 people who are not only those who contribute to the credit union movement, but also political leaders in Washington. And I definitely mentioned to them how incredibly important it is to, as you mentioned, do the banks want to crush credit unions? They do want to stifle them. They do want to prevent them from offering a full range of services. And there are currently certain laws in place that are preventing credit unions from helping our communities to the fullest. And by encouraging political leaders to support this legislature that would help alleviate some of that, we have the potential to create 140,000 new jobs at no cost to taxpayers. So it's absolutely incredible to be able to give that little push to our political leaders.
So what did you do on November 5th? Did you take personal action?
Well, actually, November 5th was merely the deadline goal. In fact, most people, I believe it was only 40,000 people that shifted their accounts on that date. Most of the movement was done before that. I began my morning on November 5th at Fox and Friends. So it was a very interesting morning to start my day at 5 a.m. talking to a conservative reporter.
So, Diana, what was bank transfer day like for your credit unions?
In the United States, we've added about 1.6 million members in that period from September 29th to the 10th of November. We had to wait until the 10th because there were so many numbers in those final weeks. It took some time. Here in California, it was 167,000 new members in that period. And I'm going to point to San Francisco Fire because they're the poster child here in the state of California. They grew the most members in the state through Bank Transfer Day here in San Francisco. They grew by 27%. And I think Darren told me it was 6,000 members when they only had 30 to begin with. So it was a big day, and the credit unions in California really did amazing work in helping the new members and onboarding them. So it was quite a success. And what's interesting is we talk about Bank Transfer Day on November 5th. All across California, Nevada, and certainly the U.S., it has not stopped. The volume, the amount is a little bit lower, but we're seeing 30, 40, 50% increases in our normal new memberships in credit unions. So that word of mouth is continuing to build and change people's lives.
A report by Javelin Strategy and Research estimated that a staggering 5.6 million big bank customers have switched banks in the 90 days surrounding Bank Transfer Day, and at least 610,000 cited Bank Transfer Day as their reason. And a Google search of Bank Transfer Day returns 25 million responses.
You talk a lot.
It seems some of the data suggests that the people that are moving over are younger, educated, and engaged consumers. Is this what you're seeing across your systems?
Absolutely. A lot of the bankers will tell you, and Bank of America was the first one out there saying, oh, it's all the crummy accounts we didn't want to keep. Nobody had any money, and you know they're just running to credit unions, and we didn't want them anyway. And that's not true. Many credit unions tracked where they were coming from. Most of the accounts were coming from Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, the big five. And they were significant checking accounts, savings, and loan products. Good credit scores, up and coming, you know, people that had good jobs. So it was not the way the banks were portraying it. But of course, when Bank of America lost 20% of their accounts in fourth quarter, they had to admit that they all couldn't have been that bad.
Kristen, the push to get consumers to move to credit unions has been around since the financial panic. On New Year's Day 2009, Arianna Huffington urged people to quit their bank, and the Huffington Post has an enormous following. But the movement didn't explode until you came on the scene. Why do you think your campaign has had such enormous impact where other well-financed and publicized campaigns did not?
Well, I think one of the primary differences between what Arianna Huffington says with the Move Your Money Project is she does not advocate for credit unions in specific. She advocates to move away from corporate banks and move to a smaller bank or a credit union. And the difference there is that a bank by any means, a for-profit bank, is still a bank. I don't care if they're that much smaller. They still have a select group of shareholders who are retaining the earnings from that organization. And that is why I personally chose credit unions as my recommendation to conscious consumers, is that you are the shareholders. Every single person who is a member of a credit union is part owner. They own a share of that profit and also a share of the warm feeling to know that their money is being used to promote growth on the local level. I think as well that the push behind Bank Transfer Day was definitely what I like to call sincere advertising, that I'd never heard of credit unions until the day before I started the event. I found them in an online search when I decided I was fed up and I was no longer going to support for-profit banks. In the true spirit of capitalism, I don't support their values, I'm not going to give them my money. I literally Googled the words banking alternatives and came up with a Wikipedia page about credit unions. And reading that very impartial information, I was sold that as a millennial, our two biggest values are communities and technology. And, you know, looking at that, I said, okay, well, some of them may not offer mobile banking or electronic check deposit just yet, but they offer a chance to take a step on the path toward economic recovery. And it moved me so much that I think when, you know, I would speak to the media or even when I would post status updates, people could tell that, you know, I wasn't some marketing agent. I wasn't some PR figurehead, no matter how much the banks wanted to twist that story otherwise, that I was just an American who said, this is the right thing to do. I'm going to do it, and I sure do hope that you'll join me. And I think that authenticity lended into changing the minds and hearts of so many people.
Had you ever run a social media campaign before?
Well, I certainly did for my small business. I'd owned a 2,000 square foot independent art gallery that the goal was fairly in line with not-for-profits, although I had not set it up that way. that, you know, I just wanted to give back to the community, and so I offered lower interest rates with, or lower commission rates with the same full range of services that most galleries offered. And in doing so, I had to cut corners anywhere I could, which meant I couldn't hire people to hang the artwork for me. I had to do that myself. I couldn't pay for advertising, that I would have to find creative and unique ways to advertise what I was doing when my receptions were. And the very first reception, with about a month of advertising time on social media, the average art gallery of that size in Los Angeles brings in anywhere from 10 to 40 people to their first reception. And 40 is a miracle. But at my grand opening, we had over 400 people that attended throughout the night. And I attributed that fully to the power of social media, of word of mouth recommendation.
Were the banks responsive to you as a small business person?
The banks were absolutely not responsive to me. That when I opened my small business, I took out personal loans from friends who had the capital to offer, and then as well threw my entire savings into it because it was my dream. And despite being a customer of Bank of America for 13 years, not only would they not offer me any sort of loan, even with a higher interest rate, but they weren't even helpful with my business banking. That I recall an incident about a week before I created the Bank Transfer Day event where I, like many business owners, was transferring money from my personal account to my business account to pay bills. And when I attempted to do this, the money disappeared from my personal account and did not show up into my business account, at which point I panicked, saying, the check's on the way, so where is my money? I spent 4 hours on the phone. I was hung up on twice and called back and sat on hold. And after 4 hours, I actually texted my mom and said, what do I do? They're not helping. And she said, well, it sounds to me like they're behaving like children. And I said, so what do I do? And she said, the way to respond to a child is to be a child. And I said, okay. And she said, remember when you were little, that if you wanted something accomplished, you would throw yourself to the ground and repeat yourself over and over and over until you got your way. And that is what finally worked. After 4 hours on the phone, I essentially threw a toddler tantrum and just kept saying, give me my money. They would start to respond as, nope, give me my money. Give me my money. Give me my money. And finally, magically, the money appeared in my business account.
Okay. I want to circle back to something Diana referenced earlier about the impact that Bank Transfer Day had on a local credit union, San Francisco Fire. That credit union has been around since 1951. And as Diana said, they had 30,000 members. They now have 37,000 members because of Bank Transfer Day. And because they started in 1951, their membership, their core membership is older. They're not consuming as much credit. And in came all these new members, 20, 30-somethings, that will, as their CEO, Darren Herman, said, it reseeded the credit union for the next generation of growth, and it created 12 new employment positions. This is just one credit union in one city. Is it gratifying to hear things like that?
It's amazing to know that you have made a difference in the lives of any single person, let alone to hear that the figure I just heard from Darren earlier almost brought me to tears then. He said 18. And to hear 18 jobs, and I know with how many credit unions there are across the country, that's an awful lot of jobs that have been created, and there are even still more jobs to be created. And it's amazing to know that you've improved, like I said, any one person's life. To imagine you've improved that many people's lives, there are no words to describe how incredible that feels.
I would imagine, I don't know you, for all I know you could have invented the electric car, but I would imagine that this is one of the bigger things you've done in your life, and it has impacted hundreds of thousands of consumers and many, many people who have jobs today as a result of Bank Transfer Day. So huge impact. Amazing. Can we flip back to Diana a little bit? Education is a big part of the mission, too.
Education is a huge part of the credit union mission. I think that the reason consumers find themselves with subprime loans or exotic mortgages or accounts or check cashing, getting stuck in the check cashing cycle or all of those things is really a lack of financial education. And I don't know about you, many of you look to be about my age. You know, did you remember a class in school? Learning how to balance a checkbook and understanding what the interest rates are on your accounts and what it means, and when you get a loan, what are all the options? And I think that really created a lot of the problems here in the U.S. And credit unions have always had a focus on consumer education, whether it be seminars and one-on-one, online. Where is Joanne? She's in the room somewhere. Joanne Budd is balanced. Financial fitness. They're on the 12th floor providing financial tools to help a credit union and other consumers around the U.S. In the 4 years of the financial crisis, they served over 1 million credit union members and helping them learn about their financial goals, how they can improve them, how they can improve their life, and really become financially dependent. Independent versus dependent upon these institutions that extract so much in fees and in abusive products. So I think education, we've got credit unions. I think the message in California is in 2011, our credit unions provided education to 5.1 million consumers just in California.
What about the check cashing centers?
What about them? Would you want me to say something nice? it's an interesting conundrum. They're an unregulated industry. You all know, or you may hear about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They are very interested in getting ready to start regulating those type of storefronts. The bad news about that, and it goes back to education, is people don't understand that $50 for the $100 advance turns into 3,000% interest if you don't pay it off in that 10-day period. And so much of it gets rolled over, and you borrow money because you're short on a payday, and the next payday comes, and to pay it back will make you short, and it just becomes this horrible, horrible cycle. And credit unions and other main or other institutions are really trying to find a way to break the habit of payday lending with responsible products and education to really make that happen.
Some municipalities, I think San Francisco among them, are considering municipal banks. What do you think about that idea?
The municipal bank's an interesting concept. It really doesn't have a lot of impact on us. Municipal banks help in the government financing of things. You know, when government has to put their money in institutions, they got to pay. And that money that they deposit, those institutions use that money to create other wealth for their organization. So a municipal bank would allow the counties or the cities or the states to actually keep their own money and generate their own revenue from that money. And many think that just being able to generate those revenues amongst themselves will solve some of the government financing problems that we have, or financial problems that we have today.
And you touched on the new Consumer Protection Agency. Are you a fan? Is it a good thing?
You know, the jury's out. And I want to say I think that what they're charged to do is grand and noble, and they have the right heart. But I've been around too long, and there's this thing called Potomac fever. And I'm just afraid that all of the idealists and all of the people that want to do well in that agency are going to get sucked into the vortex of the politics in D.C. and be forced to do something that isn't what they intended. We have a very close relationship with both the director and the director of the credit union division, and really trying to make sure they stay on path, that they really do help the consumer and not get carried away on re-regulating and writing new regulations and making things even more confusing. I do think they can make a difference. I'm not sure they'll be allowed to, or that D.C. really just changes the mission and it just becomes another federal agency.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. You're listening to Move Your Money, featuring Diana Dykstra, President and CEO of the California and Nevada Credit Union League, and Kristen Christian, a social media activist who conceived of the Bank Transfer Day movement. Kristen, your movement started at the same time as the Occupy movement. Do you get confused with them?
It's very common that people assume that the two movements are either one and the same, or that I was involved in Occupy. While I personally, you know, don't hold any negative feelings toward the Occupy movement, something my parents taught me when they influenced upon me personal responsibility was not to be wasteful, and not just the things you use and utilize, meaning physical things, but also your time and energy. And the way I figured it was, we've been asking for change. We've been asking for change for an awful long time. We elected a president who really did want to make a lot of great changes. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bureaucratic red tape that prevents change from being made in the governmental level. And so looking at that, I said, well, what good is it going to do for me personally to walk away from my small business and sit on the sidewalk holding a sign asking for someone else to make change when, my goodness, I've been asking for quite a while? And so in looking at that, I was definitely very glad to offer an avenue that would offer a solution for the Occupy movement to funnel their supporters into, and recommend to their supporters, if you'd like to make an actual difference, here's one way you can do it. And at the same time, to help offer an alternative view to supporters of the Occupy movement that even myself, I've experienced anger, direct anger from supporters and organizers of the Occupy movement, and to offer an alternative that, as Maya Angelou said, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. And, you know, I think that's very poignant, that, you know, we can't force others to make change, but we can make change ourselves where we can, and it doesn't do us any good to get angry and to hurl insults, or even better, one incident I heard of hurling cans of beans at reporters who visited an Occupy encampment. To instead use your energy, use your focus, and use your time to look at how you can make a difference.
People certainly love or loathe them. They do deserve credit for focusing the debate on income inequality and economic immobility in this country. Diana, you touched on regulation. There's been a flood of financial regulation in the aftermath of the crisis. Of course, Dodd-Frank and Consumer Protection Agency come to mind, but there's a lot going on at the state level, right, around foreclosure. And is this a lot for your credit unions to navigate?
Yeah, you know, there has been a ton of regulation. You're absolutely right. Dodd-Frank is a massive bill that has a lot of ramifications for every institution. Credit unions and small community banks are going to suffer the most. And it's not because they can't comply. It's the cost of compliance. And a lot of these regulations and the bills you talk about, California right now, we're watching 142 bills that impact credit unions just here in the state of California that are just that are written with the good intent of stopping bad things. But instead of stopping the five bad players, they apply the rules to everyone that's in that marketplace. So I am fearful the cost and the burden of the regulations. I can't say they're all bad because these big bad players did really bad things, and that's why our economy ended up where it is. So we watch that carefully. We try to do as much as we can to limit the exposure. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all credit unions are exempt except those that are over $10 billion in assets, and that's only 4 credit unions in the United States. So we're trying to mitigate it, but it can't help but roll down into these into our credit union.
Banks. In 1990, there were 15,000 banks in the U.S., now down to about 73, 60-something. 90% of banks have less than $1 billion in assets. 6,000 of the 7,300 have less than $500 million. Yet 5 banks hold 55% of the assets, and 1% of banks control 90% of the deposits. Is there something wrong with that distribution?
I think there's a lot wrong with that distribution. But people need to walk with their feet. They need to walk with their hearts. They need to decide what's best for them. But whenever you have that much aggregated in the hands of a few, we get what we get. You know, and this movement, Bank Transfer Day and the credit union movement, is about the alternatives, and it's about putting back in control, knowing who the CEO is, knowing who the board of directors is, knowing where the money goes, knowing what they do in the community, and really knowing what it means to your financial well-being. I don't want to bash the big banks. Like I said, they want to do nothing but to deny credit unions oxygen and hope that we're gone from the world, from the face of the earth. But you know, they've done wrong things, and people need to pay attention to that and make your own decision. And I think that walking away from the big five is not a bad idea, because at the end of the day, the people that have your best interests are the people that are in your community.
The Dallas Fed chair, it was in the New York Times today, was speaking about the too big to fail, and that these organizations are so large that they've got the resources and the legal muscle to really push back against regulation, and they really, with all the money that they pour into the political system, that they sort of drive that train.
Yeah, when Kristen talked about the business lending cap, that's a bill that we're waiting in D.C. to get passed. Remember, credit unions don't even have $1 trillion in assets. The big banks have put out $5 million in advertising in the Beltway. $5 million to stop credit unions from increasing member business lending, to get small businesses the capital they need and put people to work. And it's nothing on the radar of their balance sheets of what we do. We make loans they don't want to make. We hear small businesses day in and day out. I went to Bank of America. I went to Chase. I went to Wells Fargo. You name the bank. And they all told me no. They told Kristen no. Credit unions are in the business of saying yes because it's right for their community. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it bugs me to death that they're spending all of that money. And that's all their customers' money. You think, where did they get that $5 million? Off the backs of the people that have their accounts there. To try to stop credit unions from doing good, it just seems crazy to me.
William Green, he's a CEO of a bank in the East Coast, he stated that there's a new $1 billion threshold for survival due to the added cost of regulation and related functions of oversight. Do you see a giant wave of consolidation coming?
You know, people have been saying for years the big wave of consolidation is coming, certainly with more regulation, certainly with cost. We continue to see smaller organizations merge. I started the conversation, though, about credit unions and collaboration. Credit unions really do work well together so that they can collaborate and bring down the cost for doing the same thing. We all have to abide by the same regulation. So why should every credit union have a person that is responsible for it when 10 credit unions can have one? Because it's the same. So we're seeing a lot of that to help reduce that. The $1 billion, I think it's kind of... I don't think that's true. I don't think it's right. I've been in this business a long time. But it sounds like a really good thing to say.
Okay. Is healthcare an issue for your credit unions, the cost of healthcare?
You know, cost of healthcare is a big deal for all businesses. It's very expensive. You have no control on where the rates go. Again, you know, collaboration. We have lots of credit unions that are going together and buying benefits to try to lessen the cost. Certainly, they talk a lot about the new health care initiatives. Credit unions already provide health benefits to all of their employees. So that really, I mean, we're already used to that expense. Do we want it to go down? Yes, we do. It's a big chunk of money, but it's the right thing to do to provide adequate and good, not even adequate, good health care at affordable rates to our employees.
But it's going up every year?
It's going up every year. It just does. You know, it's an average, at my institution, it's an average of $458 a month per employee. That's a lot of money.
If Obamacare survives, do you think a lot of employers like yourselves will push employees into the health exchanges, or will it be the death of employer sponsored health care?
You know, I'm in credit unions. I don't know. I would say for credit unions, the answer probably would be no. Credit unions, and we talk about the value proposition that credit unions hold for their membership. The value proposition's there for the employees. So I wouldn't see that kind of push going to that kind of care. We want to serve our members, and we want to serve our employees, and we want all of them to have the best care, the best benefits, the best products, the best services. You know, but if all of a sudden that $458 a month comes to $4,000 a month, it's a different conversation. But I don't know where that health care is coming from and what's going to really happen when it all shakes out. That is not a fair question, Stephen.
Okay.
I don't have an answer. But I made one up, didn't I?
So, Kristen, Bank Transfer Day, November 5th, is also Guy Fawkes Day. Mm-hmm. Was that a coincidence?
Not at all. In England, Guy Fawkes is not viewed as a terrorist as he is here. In fact, in England and Australia and many European countries, when they mention Guy Fawkes, they say he's the only man who's ever set foot in Parliament with good intentions.
To blow it up.
But more importantly, while I personally don't approve of his approach, I'm a pacifist down to my core. The spirit behind him, one little man to stand up to this towering giant and stick his finger right in their face and say, "You are wrong, and I'm going to show you." That spirit and that courage is terribly inspiring. And I think with that spirit in mind, I wanted to give Americans a new way to remember November 5th, not as a day that, as many Americans would put it, a terrorist attempted to blow up a government, but as a day that we stood together in solidarity to advocate for our communities.
Is it a one-time deal? Is it going to be every November 5th? Is it?
I personally will not be coordinating another particular date. Ongoing, as Diana said, it is not, you know, stopped. People are still moving their money. They are still speaking to their neighbors. With the United Nations declaring 2012 the International Year of the Cooperative, as far as I'm concerned, in 2012, every day is Bank Transfer Day.
I lost a point earlier. I want to come back to it about the impact of Bank Transfer Day, all of the new jobs that have been created, the impact on thousands and thousands of consumers. It's this huge thing, right? It's probably the biggest thing you've ever done in your life, but it's really a very selfless thing. It hasn't really benefited Kristen Christian.
That's quite accurate. You know, it's funny that a lot of opponents and a lot of those who work in the banking industry, they have two questions. One was, who's bankrolling this? And the second is, how much money have you made? Which, during the course of Bank Transfer Day, I accepted absolutely no monetary donations, whether from corporations, from credit unions, leagues, or their associations, or from private citizens. I was raised in a family that stressed personal responsibility. And regardless of if I was doing something that I felt would benefit my fellow men or not, I was taking that upon myself. And whether or not I was, you know, dedicating my time to that or not, I was still obligated to feed myself and to keep a roof over my head. And so I thought it was absolutely unacceptable for me to ask anyone else to fund that. And so, it hasn't monetarily benefited me in any way. But at the same time, it has. It has benefited me in the sense that I think it's a proud few that can say that they've independently been able to inspire that many people to advocate for themselves or their communities. It's a proud few who can say that this one little action I took has benefited the lives of so many people, and that's incredibly gratifying. And definitely as well, it's benefited me in the sense that, you know, I found where my heart belongs, and that is, I always knew it belonged in benefiting my communities and my neighbors. I just didn't know how. And so I think it benefited me in helping me find my place in the world, and that is in advocating for our communities and, more importantly, their local economic growth.
So I'm thinking, what's next for Kristen Christian? Consumer advocates, there's many examples of people that have gone on to very big things, Ralph Nader, Elizabeth Warren. What's next for Kristen Christian?
Many people have asked if I've considered going into politics, and I love the laughter. That was my first response the first time I was asked that question. That I think that I'm still incredibly young. Having a good idea doesn't necessarily mean you have the experience to be able to enact as much change as there needs to be in the world. But also, I'm waiting for a particular change in our political system before I would become a part of it. And that change is that a candidate would be able to run for a significant office without corporate campaign contributions. That it was so important to me to not accept monetary donations also because I wanted to hold my head high and say there's absolutely no chance you can say I'm in the pocket of anybody else. And you know, I think it's coming. I think that that's part of being Transfer Day's influence, was to say you can reach hundreds of thousands of people with no money. I literally spent $10 on the Bank Transfer Day campaign, and that $10 was only spent to register the URL, banktransferday.org, and I did so because the hacker group Anonymous attempted to take credit for Bank Transfer Day. And when they did so, I said, oh, man, if I don't register that website, they're gonna. And so I spent $10 to register the website. But short of that, I spent no money on the campaign itself. And, you know, many political science professors across the U.S. are now teaching in their classrooms and showing that as an example that you can reach a very significant number of people through the power of social media. So I think, you know, over the next 10 years or so, we probably will see politicians who are able to run successful campaigns without spending significant amounts of money. The technology is already there. It's just a matter of putting it into practice. So I definitely would not go into politics until it's accepted that you can run a campaign without spending a significant amount of money. In the meantime, you know, I would like to gain more experience, and I think there's still a lot I can do outside of the political realm to have a positive impact. I will be continuing my role as an advocate for our communities through credit unions. I've been consulting for many credit unions while I determine exactly how I can continue to have a positive impact in that world. Including spreading the movement abroad. It inspired several countries to look at what Americans did and say, well, heck, if they can do it, we can do it. And so I've been very honored to advise other individuals across the world on how they can initiate movements like this in their countries, including I'm terribly honored to be traveling to speak with the Polish equivalent of the Credit Union National Association of CUNA, which is called SCOC. I thought that was a rather interesting name, but I'll be traveling to speak with members of SCOC and explain to them how they can put this authentic marketing to use to advocate for themselves in Poland.
We have a number of questions from our audience tonight. Diana, I'm assuming this one's for you. How many credit unions have failed?
Failed from when? We've had 90 in the last 4 years.
And how many credit unions are there in the U.S.?
7,400.
Okay.
And I think, and it was almost 500 banks, just to put that in perspective.
And are credit unions, are their depositors insured?
Depositors are insured. Same insurance, different insurance buckets. But all deposits in credit unions is $250,000 per account, and how accounts are structured. Same, just call it different names.
Are credit unions open to the general public?
You can probably find a credit union you can belong to in any city, anywhere in the United States. But to say that all credit unions are open to the general public is an overstatement. The credit unions here in San Francisco, I talked about, all three of them have what's called a community charter. So if you live, work, or go to school in the county of San Francisco, you can become a member. So you see that, and there are credit unions that have multiple communities. So you can find a credit union anywhere, but they're not all-inclusive, but they're not exclusive, because there's many credit unions in every city.
My bank has ATMs all over the city and country. Where do credit union customers get cash?
In all the banks, all the ATMs around the country. I started talking about the 28,000 ATMs in the surcharge credit union ATM network. That is a huge network of ATMs. Some credit unions, and I keep pointing to San Francisco Fire, I used to work there, so I'm proud of them. They reimburse these. You can use any ATM in the world, and they reimburse you if there's a surcharge that you are charged. So you can get cash anywhere. You can get cash at Walmart. You can get cash at the... I don't even use cash anymore. I was in D.C. I was going to the same conference, and I arrived in, it's like, I have no money, and how am I going to take a cab? And thank goodness my account's at San Francisco Fire, because that $1.75 surcharge is like, ooh, I hate it, but I knew that they gave it back to me.
Kristen, has your business survived?
Unfortunately, due to the media attention, there were opponents who were quite angry and quite scared that the banking industry attempted to frighten the American people, which I think shows where their heart lies, that credit unions give information. They don't influence by fear. That the banking industry attempted to tell people that this move would bring our economy to its knees, that it would cripple an already injured economy. And that's just not accurate. That was not what was going to happen, and clearly that's not what did happen. But I did have some angry consumers who contacted me and said some very scary things. And because of that, since I was the sole employee of my business, was no longer able to run it. That being said, it was worth it. That while I loved my business, it was my child. And I know countless members of the Los Angeles art community miss it very dearly. It was worth every moment. And it was worth it to say goodbye to that business, because it's offered an opportunity to make a difference in the lives of so many individuals. And it's offered me to help more people than I was able to help before.
What is the typical monthly fee for a checking account?
Where?
At a credit union.
Oh, at a credit union? Most credit unions, it's free. Most credit unions, it's free without strings. Some credit unions, it's free if you have a direct deposit. I can't tell you the average. I would say if there's an average fee, it's less than $10 of accounts that have fees. There's accounts you can get that have high interest bearing and big rewards and all kinds of bells and whistles. And if you don't maintain a balance, there could be a fee. But 95% of all credit unions, the checking account is always a free service.
This member wants to know if all banks are bad, and I think the distinction is about community banks. Are community banks the same as for-profit organizations, or are they more like credit unions?
It depends. I try not to bash community banks, because they really are in the community. Now, there's community banks that are disguised as community banks that are very big banks, and you've got to be careful to understand the ownership. Community banks do good work in their communities, but they still do have shareholders. And so their profit motives are still to generate as much revenue as they can to pay those shareholders. There are a great number of community banks that have a different charter, and I'm not going to get into all the details, but it's called a subchapter S, where it's owned by a limited number of people. So there's a. It's not so much shareholder value as much as spreading it amongst the people in the community that actually hold the shares. So they're not all bad. Most of them are. But I run credit unions, right? I have to say that. But it really isn't about. I'm not here to bash them. They're out there bashing credit unions every single day. We don't do anything wrong. What we do is serve our members. And that's all we ever wanted to do. And if our members didn't like the services we provided or the products we provided, they're free to walk away. And the banks are only worried about credit unions because people are waking up to them. And it's not because we're special. And we do what's right. And if you like our business model, then you should be a member of a credit union. And if you don't like our business model and you want to stay with a commercial bank or a community bank, that's okay too. You just need to understand the difference. And you need to understand what it means to you personally.
Do credit unions offer safe deposit boxes?
Some. Was it somebody that was over the age of 50 that asked that? The only reason I ask that is when you have safe deposit boxes, it's only people over 50 even know what they are.
I know what they are.
Have you ever had one?
I do have one under my mother's name.
Oh, well, there you go. She's over 50. There you go. No. But many credit unions have them. Safe deposit boxes are very expensive. You have to build big vaults. You know, when they show people breaking into them in the movies, they really are, you know, 1 foot wide steel reinforced walls. And it's gone out of vogue. But there are many credit unions that have big vaults and they've got safe deposit boxes. But again, you know, I think one of the things with credit unions, you have to understand what you need. And then you find the credit union that has what it is that you need. If you don't want a safe deposit box and there's a credit union that doesn't have them, great. But if it's really important to you, then you just find one that has. And that's what you need to do with any of your services. You have to figure out what you want and need first and then find that institution that can provide that for you.
How do they do that? Is there an online tool or something they could use? Or how would someone find
it? I'm going to ask Kristen. I just learned that the social media is a new language, and now I realize why I don't understand it, because nobody taught it to me yet.
I recommend that people within the United States utilize asmarterchoice.org. That is a website run by the Credit Union National Association to help you find credit unions near you. And from there, you can... you should call around to different credit unions in your area and see if they have the services you need and if they value the same things you do. Because while credit unions overall value communities, I mean, goodness sakes, their motto is people helping people. But it comes down to if there's a particular charity that is close to your heart, call around and saying, hey, do you support this charity? What charities do you support? How do you support the community? Then as well, what financial services they offer, because it does vary from credit union, as it does bank to bank. And at the end of the day, financial decisions are a very, very personal and varied decision. That the same decisions, I would make, people ask me regularly, well, which credit union did you join? And I'm very proud to say I joined Coast Hills Federal Credit Union based out of Lompoc, California. And I chose that credit union for a few different reasons that are very personal to me. I joined because they used to be Vandenberg Federal Credit Union, and I come from an Air Force family. And if it hadn't been for Vandenberg Air Force Base, we wouldn't have lived where we lived. And also I chose them because they have been serving the Central Coast of California for an incredibly long time. And they do such a terrific job of that. So while I chose them, you know, somebody else may not have chosen them, even if they grew up in that same area, because while they just did add mobile banking, there's a few features, you know, they're still working out to be able to add that someone else might need right now. So it is a terribly personal decision. Any financial matter is. And it shouldn't be taken with a grain of salt, that you should really invest and educate yourself before making those decisions, because in order to be a conscious consumer, you have to really be conscious, and you have to be conscious of every aspect of a decision and the implications before you're able to make that decision.
And that sounds like a good place to close. Our thanks to Diana Dykstra and Kristen Christian for their participation in tonight's program. We also thank our audiences here and as also on the radio. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you are in the know, is adjourned.
Thank you,
ladies.
Thank you.